Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, we're back. It's time for another exciting week of Beards on MMA. Well, this week, we sort of planned this on 24 hours notice, so we have no guests, but the guests aren't why you listen, right? Anyway, downloads of all Beards on MMA shows in the past are available on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Blog Talk Radio, obviously including every single show from the previous run as well. Beards on MMA sponsored by the Mod Cabin. I've lost it. Backwoods Beauty Products for Bearded Men, always available at themodcabin.com, all one word, all lowercase, and on Twitter at themodcabin. You can follow us on Twitter at BeardsOnMMA and find us on Facebook under our show's name. This is normally the part in the show where I'd say, hey, we're looking for some more sponsors, but, well, we haven't really done this in 2 months, so I don't think anybody wants to sponsor us anymore. Oh, of course they do, because we've got Cutman Matt and Jordan ready to go. What's up, guys?
Where did that song come from? Like, all you know, of our opening music, like, I can't make the connection in my mind right now. And just for people listening at home, I don't know what song Matt is going to play 99% of the time. It's a surprise to me as it is to you. This was a super surprise, what you said right there.
First of all, I'm fat, so there's that, right? But when we originally finished Beards on MMA, I actually canceled the paid Blog Talk Radio studio. And I guess Blog Talk Radio didn't appreciate that because they deleted our entire song roll that we had. It was like, I don't know, 70, 80, 90 songs, a whole bunch of joke rolls and things like that. And so we're left
those
with like
motherfuckers.
7 songs in the studio right now, just because I haven't gone and uploaded more. And so I'm looking through the list here, and I'm like, okay, well, Journey, Don't Stop Believing, we've done that. Motley Crue, Home Sweet Home, we've done that.
Those are ending songs.
Yeah,
Highwaymen
Against the Wind, we've done that. Eurythmics, Sweet Dreams, we've done that. Why isn't Lana Miles' Black Velvet here? And then I was like, well,
it's awesome song.
Because that song is sexy as shit. Yeah.
It's really down to Take On Me from A-ha or Fat from Weird Al, and I couldn't remember if I'd done Take On Me before, so that's where it went. And to answer your next question, I don't know why Fat from Weird Al is in the studio, but it is.
And it's a glorious thing that it is.
Yeah. Now, Jordan said the song was racist off the air. Why is this song racist?
More chins than Chinatown. I find that offensive.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, I think that's pretty fair. That's
we can't believe we're going there. We're just going to fucking start off way.
That stuff flew a little easier in the 80s and 90s. Actually, I remember a Garfield comic specifically when I was like 8 years old that said, you know, I wouldn't call you fat Garfield, but you've got more chins than a Hong Kong telephone directory. And I thought that was funny back then. But now I can see, Jim Davis kind of towing the line there.
Is that the Canadian version? Is it a Canadian version? Do they call a phone book a directory?
No.
Is that like color and honor and all that?
With the extra
what's
U?
What's a phone book? We have
directory?
A directory.
A directory?
Hey, you can't even say that that's a Canadian thing because the first time that my wife asked me where the bubbler was, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she wanted a water fountain, and I was like, fucking Wisconsin, man.
What?
Fucking Wisconsin, yeah. But no, you can get away with it. Like, what's that Dire Straits song, Money for Nothing? I mean,
Money
there's
for
some
nothing.
Shit in there. That,
yeah,
you could never, never get away with that. You know, with that song today,
I don't know if you know, but apparently, I read somewhere that the uncensored full version of Money for Nothing actually is banned from U.S. radios now. Like you
because
can play the
that?
Edited, you can play the edited version that's like, you know, 3.5 minutes long, but you can't play the whole thing.
America, you know, what can you do, you know?
I'll blame that ban because it probably started in Canada.
Is Dire Straits a Canadian ban?
No,
wait,
I think Mark Knopfler's British, isn't he?
Oh, that's okay. But okay.
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize they weren't. I mean, I thought they were like, you know, part of that like Boston, New Jersey kind of wave that came out with like Springsteen and. You know, those guys, like, I didn't realize that they were not an American band. All I know about that is that that song supposedly came from an actual conversation that he heard in a Sears.
Yes.
Heard two Sears, like, texts talking or whatever. And so the majority of the lyrics of that song actually came from those two texts talking in Sears. So that's all I know. That's my Dire Straits trivia knowledge.
Yeah, and I can confirm that Mark Knopfler's from Glasgow.
Ah, it hurts my heart. I thought he was an American. It's a sad day.
When are we going to open the show with Robin Sparkles?
I love Robin Sparkles so much.
That's a really interesting interesting dilemma because we play 80s music to open the show. Let's Go to the Mall was technically 1996. According
to
How I Met Your Mother.
But the 80s came late to Canada.
Exactly. We're gonna have to think on this one. Maybe go to the Beards on MMA executive board and try and figure that out.
Can we at least agree that Robin Sparkles is the greatest Canadian music export?
Yeah.
Well, her along with her collaborations with Alan Thicke, yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
I think those are the key, you know.
Yeah.
Is this a
How I Met Your Mother podcast? I feel like
we've had those on back when I used to do that gaming podcast G3. We had every single discussion one night just degenerate into How I Met Your Mother stuff.
It's a pretty great show.
Yeah,
I was just watching it earlier. Yeah.
Speaking of collaborations, I got one for you. I just came across today. Shooter Jennings, Waylon Jennings' son. Amazing musician, amazing artist. His record label, Black Country Rock, I believe it is, just put out a Mr. Belding song.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
It's like blues with Belding or something.
Hey, and that brings us full circle from the beginning because Mr. Belding's really fat now, too.
Oh, yeah, he's huge. Yeah, he was in that video for Sweep the Leg by, like, We the Kings or something Kings. And they brought back all the people from Karate Kid, and it was a song about Karate Kid. And it had all the actors, like every one of the original actors that were major at all. But for some reason, Mr. Belding also shows up in that video. And he owns, like, a pizza parlor or something like that. And he is a solid 350 to 400 pounds now. Like big time.
He's a hefty feller.
But that's all right. Who cares, man? He made all that Saved by the Bell.
But yeah, I remember when he popped into was it? It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I think that was his first public appearance in a few years, and everybody was like, "What the hell just happened here?" Because he didn't disappear like after Saved by the Bell. There was Saved by the Bell, the new class, and so he was around on TV for another few years. But he went from Mr. Belding to Mr. Building pretty quickly, you know.
Ouch! Holy shit!
And it's
laying it
down.
Teams, Belding's Blues.
That's really cool. We should get some of that music and play it. We can make we'll put a fake intermission into one of our shows one day and do that, because I don't think we have rules against the intermissions. We can play whatever we want, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We do what we want. Anyways.
Yeah, because we're 10 minutes into the show. We're 10 minutes into the show now, and we haven't even said what we're talking about tonight. That's why we do what we want. I just wanted to say one thing that you guys don't see. You two as the co-host too, is the Blog Talk Radio Studio has been quote unquote upgraded since our last show. I'm looking here at a brand new interface and everything looks really different, but I'm still thinking it's the same old Blog Talk Radio, right? It's nice, but it's like gift wrapping shit. You can gift wrap it and put a bow on it, but it's still shit.
Yes. Thank you, Chris. Oh man,
all right.
You think you're what was the old saying from when we were kids? Well, at least American kids, I don't know, maybe they weren't this mean to each other in Canada. Like, you think you're hot shit on a silver platter, but you're a cold turd on a paper plate. You know, that's that's Blog Talk Radio right now.
Yeah. I've never heard that term before, but it probably involved maple syrup in Canada. So I'll try and think of what we'll say to each other back then.
Yeah, you think you're maple syrup on pancakes, Dave, but you're really just ketchup on French fries like the Americans do.
You're that synthetic stuff made in the factory, yeah.
You're not really out of a tree, eh? All right? Yeah, you're synthetic. You're synthetic syrup.
All right, so we wanted
this is
to
actually
quickly
an
explain
MMA podcast. I just want
yeah, this
to
is actually an MMA podcast at some point. I just wanted to quickly explain where we've been for the last 2 months, because the last show we did was, what, March the 2nd? Something like that. We had Josh Sampo on, and it's now May the 6th.
No, so, we did one since then. No, didn't we do one after Josh? No?
The Sampo show was the last one.
Guess?
Yeah, no, that was us talking on the phone that one night after we were drunk, and we were like, guys, we should do Beards on MMA again. Why don't we just do a podcast right now? And then we just – I realized the next morning we were talking
that's
each other
right.
on the
yeah,
phone.
Yeah, that was a good
half.
Thing we didn't do that. That really happened, by the way. Really, that's not a made-up story. You just made
that's
up.
Right.
That actually happened. Anyway, sorry.
So I think the show was, what, March the 2nd or 3rd, and my daughter started daycare on March the 2nd, and by March the 4th she was really sick. And thankfully, it was nothing life-threatening, but, I mean, you guys went through the ordeal with me week after week. I'd be like, she's not getting better. I don't know what's happening. She was losing weight. Doctors were getting really worried about her, and when it seemed like she was getting better, she'd come down with something else. And like I said, it was nothing life-threatening. It was just kind of cold and fever after cold and fever after cold and fever. Sure, there was a flu in there somewhere as well, because the flu shots this year weren't really all that good. My wife and I just, it was really hard to handle, because she went from being a good sleeper at night to waking up 6 or 7 times in the night. There was a period for about a week and a half where she wouldn't actually sleep in the crib. We had to sleep in her room with her, sitting in the reclining chair where she was just sleeping on our shoulders the entire night. And it was pretty rough for a little while, but it's just within the last, I don't know, two, three weeks where things have gotten better. And
she's coming out of it now.
To come back and do this. Yeah, she's great now. She's probably upstairs throwing food and laughing at something. So things are good. So thank you.
There you go.
Thank you guys for hanging by, and you know, you guys especially for sticking by me through all the rants and all my panic through all that time.
There was some.
Yeah.
But George and I were, you know, drunk or whatever while you were talking.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. You guys are very supportive throughout, so it was good stuff. All right, so it is now 14 minutes into the show, and we're now going to talk about what we are covering this week on Beards on MMA. Because this is an MMA podcast, and because we are self-professed members of the MMA media, we're going to be talking about Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao at some point, I'm sure, because it seems like that's what the MMA media does. We're going to be talking about the UFC Reebok deal and the details that came out today, and we'll be talking about UFC's first jaunt into the Armpit of Australia, Adelaide.
You keep saying that, but like, I just recently made a friend that lives there, and now I feel bad about saying that because I feel like I'm
shit-talking hometown. I probably have a half dozen Twitter followers from Adelaide that I chat with on a regular basis, but it doesn't mean that it makes Adelaide in general a better place. If you guys want to see a good representation from the Australians themselves about Adelaide, I would recommend finding a clip from a show called American Rosso. It's these two Australian comedians. They did a hilarious song about Adelaide on their show about 7 or 8 years ago, and it still sticks to me to this day because I bought the DVDs when I was over in Australia all those years ago because everybody kept recommending this American Rosso show. And episode 2 or 3 of their show, they bust out this Adelaide song that's absolutely amazing, and it's what stuck with me. I'm sure Adelaide's a perfectly good place, but I got to go with what I've been told from the Australians themselves, and it doesn't sound very good.
Is that where when we were at the MMA Awards, we met those two that Australian couple?
Yeah.
And is that where they were from? Was Adelaide?
No, they were from
or
Sydney.
That area.
No, they were from Sydney, but I did ask them about Adelaide, and they're like, "Oh, mate, no, not Adelaide." I'm like, "All right."
Okay.
And then they proceeded to knock on referees for an hour in front of Mike Beltran. Which
they did.
Yeah.
Yes, Mike Beltran took it well. Did not kill anybody.
Yeah.
Would have been within his rights. LAPD officer could have covered it up, probably.
Mike could have killed all of us at the table with one fell swoop. Mike's a big guy.
Nah, Jason Herzog was there.
Jason wasn't at the table at the time, I don't think, was he?
Oh, then we would have died.
I don't know if you were there either. That might have been when you guys disappeared, and I was like, where did my friends go?
Oh, that's right. For the listeners at home, that was because I disappeared with a famous MMA referee and proceeded to mack on some German chicks.
We won't name him now, but we named him 30 seconds ago.
They don't know that's who I was with there. And then that German chick added herself to my Facebook, and then I didn't accept the friend request, and then just blocked it. I was like, I don't need this in my life right now.
While they were out drinking and picking up German chicks, I was at home studying the Bible.
Leviticus specifically.
That's right.
Yes.
That's where all the good rules are. That's the one with all the crazy shit. Like, oh, are you wearing a jacket made of more than 2 fibers? Like a cotton poly blend? Yeah, that's a stoning.
That's a paddling.
All right. Go, Jordan. Go.
I was just going to say, not the weirdo Bible, my Bible, the Rock and Gem Trails of Oregon. I was studying pyrite veins.
Guys, let's go into the news today about the UFC Reebok pay scale, which has now actually. So the funny thing is, Cody Gibson revealed the news this morning. Cody Gibson, who is apparently no stranger to controversy, as you guys are well aware, he is of Google me bitch infamy.
He'll be fighting for me soon, by the way.
Yeah. He tweeted this morning saying that the Reebok figures came out, in a now deleted tweet posted the pictures. Now here's the problem is that he's now deleted the tweet, and most of the MMA sites actually just showed his tweet instead of taking the tiers down. So let me see if I can remember off the top of my head. It's tiered based on your tenure with the company. 0 to 5 fights, I believe you get $2,500.
Yeah.
6 to 10 fights, you get $10,000.
$5,000.
I got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So go ahead.
11 to 15 is 10 G's. 16 to 20 is 15. Fighters with 21 bouts or more will receive $20,000 per fight. Challengers for the title fight get 30, and champions receive 40 per fight.
Okay, and now. Also mixed in there is the rumor, I haven't seen any confirmation, that champions also get a $250,000 bonus.
I saw that rumor also.
I feel like, though, because they're getting so much bad press, I feel that if that were the truth right now, the UFC would be falling over themselves to be showing how much money they're giving away to fighters. So I feel like if that were true, they would have told us because they would want us to know.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the UFC has confirmed, though, that what Cody Gibson tweeted out this morning was true. So we know
yeah,
that
it's
much.
It's absolutely accurate. Yeah, I mean, because yeah. that's the I got a copy of the press release later, and that's absolutely what it is, and it's embarrassing to the UFC. Matt, you did that thing earlier. I'm sorry, Jordan. You did that thing earlier, Matt, where you broke it down to where, like, if they fought three times in a year, you know, fights.
Oh,
one,
yes,
two,
yes,
three,
yes. So this
is. It was $15 an hour.
This was that.
If you broke it down to a 40-hour work week.
Yeah, yeah, this is that $15 minimum wage thing I was talking about, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, so basically
okay.
what it boils down to. Well, you want to go ahead?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, so if you're thinking of a 40-hour work week, UFC fighter that fights three times a year, if he works, you know, 40-hour week, he's making $15 an hour to be a pro athlete in the UFC. So my wife broke it down. She goes, let me look. If you're, like, a practice squad dummy making the league minimum in the NFL, you're sixth string. You don't even, like, show up to the fucking games. You're just – you watch them from the bar and just – because you know that you're absolutely not going to play. Your hourly, if you broke it down the same way Matt did for the UFC, is $120 an hour. Okay, to be like the bullshit nobody on an NFL team, like way back on the bench. And these are the guys that are going out and, like, you know, you could be a guy that's on your fourth fight in the UFC and you're on a 4-fight win streak and you can be main carding it and you're making $15 an hour. That's embarrassing. That is, like, they want to call themselves a legit pro sport league and do all this bullshit. And yet you've got NFL players making $120 an hour per capita for the shittiest ones, and some of our best fighters are making $15 an hour. UFC should be embarrassed of itself.
Yeah, so to give you another indication, because I like to throw out the Canadian Football League whenever I can. CFL rookies, so CFL rookies make a minimum $50,000 according to a Sports Illustrated article last year. And the CFL salary cap is less than our music budget on this show. So I'm just putting that out there.
If I can defend the UFC real quick.
What?
What? What?
Just thinking of some other numbers here. That does not include the 30% they get from their they'll be provided their clothes, which they get to keep. Woo. But they'll be selling the team pen, team pulver. I can't think of any other fighters right now. But
oh,
they'll
yeah,
be selling
yeah. yeah, they'll be selling that online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they get 30% of that. However, however, it doesn't say that they made a weird reference to where they can choose who they sell and who they don't sell. So if you're
well in
if
the
you're,
store, so in the Reebok yeah. like physical retailer location, yeah, the and of course that local retailer is not going to sell a you know a guy that's like you know in his second fight in the UFC that's never even been off Fight Pass, you know what I mean? He's not going to
yeah,
be in the
exactly.
Reebok store, yeah, you know what I mean? They're making 30% of the 7 shirts that their friends and family are going to buy online, you know, so that's an
yeah.
extra $30. Thanks guys. You know,
now,
like,
one thing I wanted to ask you guys, and I don't know if you've heard this or seen this, but the UFC is now selling fight-worn memorabilia in the UFC store online. Do the fighters get a cut of that too? Because Derek
you
Brunson's
fucking know
gloves,
they don't.
Derek Brunson's gloves from that night that the show that we were at in Vegas where he knocked out Ed Herman. They're up for $1,500 right now.
I guarantee you they're not getting a piece of that.
I bet you
it's the UFC. Collected them after the fight and is now doing that.
Yeah, no,
and I know that
because
there are other big organizations out there that will collect, you know, stuff after the fight. They'll collect it mm-hmm. back and, you know, call it whatever. But I guarantee you he's not getting a piece of that.
I know what you're getting at, Jordan. And, yes, the prices do seem a bit high. They've the Brunson gloves were the most extreme example. There's a pair of fight-worn Jake Ellenberger gloves for $1,000, and there's another set
that's
for $800, and they have some wraps there for about $100 as well. So,
here's what okay. Let's look at it this way. Why if I'm a fighter, okay, and you're going to sell my gloves for $1,000, you know, the UFC is going to sell my gloves for $1,000, my fight-worn gloves.
Well, that obviously tells me they're worth a grand. Why would I even, if they are giving them a piece, you know, it's like 25 or 30%, or even if it was as much as half, 50-50, fuck you. I'll go sell them on eBay myself and get 100%.
Their contract states that they have to give back one part of the fight-worn memorabilia to be sold in the UFC store. That I remember. I remember that much.
These guys are being fucked every chance they get. And you know what? You know what annoys me about that the most, I think, is I see these higher-level UFC fighters. I have a lot of, you know, acquaintances and friends that are in the UFC. We all do, you know, all three of us. And I don't think that any of us know anybody other than maybe a champ that's like, woohoo, I'm so glad I'm in the UFC now. Because nobody I know is. Everybody I know is annoyed as shit to be in the UFC. And yet I still see these younger fighters, or even on SureDog on the message boards, where like RFA or Titan or Bellator will sign like a bigger, you know, a bigger fighter or a bigger prospect. And they go, oh, man, I hope he can get a few wins there and then move on to the UFC. And it's like, but everybody in the UFC is fucking hates it. Like, no, like, let them stay in RFA or Titan or even World Series or Bellator, where at least, you know, they're going to have their asses kissed a little bit, and there's not going to be a limit on sponsors, and they can make a little bit more money, and they're still going to be on TV. You know,
yeah,
I see the dream of making it to the UFC starting to die.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I was just about to say something similar. Within the next year to 18 months, I can see one of two things happening. Either the UFC backs off their individual sponsor stance. Like, obviously, this Reebok deal is for what, 6 years, 7 years? That's not going away. But allowing these people like Dynamic Fastener and Corn Nuts and whatnot to come back and sponsor the individuals and let them put this stuff on their Reebok clothing, or you're going to see a lot of fighters who will finish their contracts out and sign elsewhere a la Phil Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to even out the market quite a bit. You know, the UFC still may end up being the darling of MMA as it is right now, but you're going to start seeing a higher quality of competition in places like Titan and in places like Bellator especially, because, you know, I mean, it's very, very obvious that Bellator, UFC and
it's
Bellator
the
are the
two.
One and two, right? And
and even 1FC,
like, I can see a lot of guys heading overseas to 1FC because
1FC gives great deals to its fighters, man. It does good. Like, 1FC treats fighters very well. I will absolutely go on record as saying that 1FC, you know, they may not put on the best matchmaking, but who does as of late? And, you know, it's just I've never heard anybody unhappy to be fighting for 1FC. So I'll say that. But I see a big influx of your fighters, and because the UFC just does, what, 4 fight contracts now? So I see people in that, like, coming off their fourth or their eighth fight, you know, so in that first and second tier of 2,500 and 5 grand in sponsorship, I see them being the ones, you know, maybe calling up, Rich Chow or Scott Coker or somebody and being like, hey, you know, let's talk. Because if I can make, you know, maybe the UFC's paying me 12 and 12, and maybe you're going to pay me 10 and 10 or 8 and 8, but I'm going to be able to, you know, get 20 grand in sponsors instead of 5,000, you know, it's a net gain. You know, they're going to start looking at things like that. And don't think that the MMA managers aren't going to get on that, because, you know, one of the biggest things that an MMA manager does is, you know, get sponsorships, and they get a percentage of that sponsorship, usually, you know, around 20%. So if I'm an MMA manager and I can make more money by steering my guy towards an organization that doesn't limit sponsorships like Bellator, why wouldn't I do that? It's what's best for me as a manager. He's still going to get fights. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still going to pay his money and even more because of the sponsorships available. I think that we see that as well, where we see these MMA managers seeing the writing on the wall that the UFC is almost trying to get rid of them or, like, corner them out at this point. They start steering people towards other organizations.
I think the biggest thing on that is going to be how many companies stick around for outside of the cage advertising. Fighters are still allowed to have sponsors. You just can't wear them into the cage. So are we going to see a lot more fighters doing the bodybuilding fitness shows? Are we going to do, you know what I mean?
How many fighters does the UFC have on its roster right now? Like, do either of you know? I don't personally know. I'm asking.
For 586?
I think it's
like 586.
500, I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's only so much shit that can go around. Oh, all you're doing is driving the few fighters that I know of that had just barely started to crack, like, being able to train full-time, you know, back to their second jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't believe that there are pro athletes that are making $30,000 a year and their president of their company is bragging on Twitter about dropping $100,000 a hand in a Vegas casino.
Or that they're the fastest growing sport in North America. Because this shows that there's still a long disparity between, you know, places like the UFC and,
you know,
any of the big four.
You know, and I have a friend that, you know, Ian, who's been in the game fucking forever. You know, he was actually the original matchmaker for Bellator. And he's like, you know, everybody thinks we're so evolved. He's like, bro, we're still the Wild West. He's like, MMA is still in the Wild West right now. It's still in it. You think it looks dominant right now because nobody's taking that guy down, but he's like, it's still the Wild West. Anything can still happen right now. We are so not established as much as everybody thinks they are, you know, and I believe him. You know, I think that goes right on. I mean, this shows it right here that we can just straight up fuck you. It was just what the UFC did. They just straight up fucked their fighters. And they're like, what are you going to do about it? You know, it's like, oh, shit, this is the Wild West. This is, where's the, you know, there's no public outcry. It's ESPN's not running a major story with, you know, fighters coming on and bitching. And there's no petition on that petition website. What the fuck is that petition website called? And if it gets like 250,000 signatures,
change.org, is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, change.org. There's no petition on change.org to get UFC fighters more pay. You know what I mean? Like, nobody cares yet, you know? And I don't know. It just, the whole thing I thought today was just a black eye for the sport as a whole. You know, sure, does it make other organizations look more attractive? Yes, and this, you know, competition build, you know, a better product, absolutely, that's capitalism, America. But at the same time, like, it's a black eye because it shows just how far we haven't come today.
Mm-hmm.
That's my rant.
I think we're going to need a little bit of time for all this to hash out, especially with the way that I'm thinking even farther ahead to, like, the way that fighter contracts work out, right? Because I'm looking at a guy who's fighting this weekend, Hatsu Hiyoki. The guy's lost four of his last five fights, and he's probably out of the UFC if he loses to Dan Hooker, who, by the way, has a really cool name. I'm looking at him and going, well, if he wins, don't the UFC contracts state you're guaranteed another fight with the UFC? I think that's what I've seen in some of the fighter contracts, but I can't remember if the verbiage says you have to take the fight.
I don't know. I'd never heard that before. So I'm pretty sure
the contracts do state that you're guaranteed another fight.
You always know so much more than I do about this shit, but, okay. But I see what you're – like, so what do you see the long term – like, what do you see the changes in the fighter contracts becoming?
Well, I don't know that I see the changes in the fighter contracts. I'm just wondering if, let's say, Hatsu Hiyoki finishes – this is the last – let's just say this is the last fight of his contract and he wins. And they come back and say, hey, you know, we're going to give you another fight. We're going to give you, the rematch against Bart Palaszewski or something like that. He's going to come out of retirement to fight you. Can Hatsu say no? Or is it a case where they're exercising and the right on their contract and saying, no, you got to stick around and fight for us again when maybe he doesn't want to? I mean,
comes down to matching rights. I think that's a matching rights thing. You know, everybody always has that 1 year of matching rights thing, that bullshit. You know, that's happened to, you know, a few things between Bellator and UFC. But I think that might be how it's worded, you know, that they can opt for one more fight And then, you know what? I have contracts like that with my sponsors, though, and shit.
Yeah.
And everything is written in the favor, to be honest, of my sponsors, where they, you know, they write shit like, you know, they have the option to give me more, but I can't ask for more. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, it's one of those things. So, I don't know. That'd be interesting. But think about that, though. You just said he's dropped 4 out of his last 5, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you just said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that puts him
yeah.
in the 6-tier fight range. This will be a 7th fight. So he's going to make $5,000 in sponsorship, even though he's 1-4.
No, he's he's 3-4. This is fight number 8 because he beat George Roop and Bart Palaszewski to open up.
So it's fight number 8.
Remember
he's still in that 5 grand range. Okay.
Yeah.
But
you remember
still,
at one point he was considered to be. Never mind.
No, go.
No,
no.
Say,
what is
he
considered
to be
Matt?
He was considered to be the number one contender that, you know, to face Jose Aldo, and he declined. And then that started the downward
spiral. Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that. but, you know what I mean? Like, okay, so he's 3-4 at 7 fights right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be somebody that's on a 7-0 run right now. And they're going to make the same sponsorship money. A guy that's 3-4 in the UFC is going to make the same sponsorship money as a guy that's 7-0 in the UFC.
Yeah, here's a perfect example would be Dennis Bermudez, who is 7-2 as a UFC fighter with a 7-fight win streak in between. So he lost it's bookends, right? He lost the Ultimate Fighter finale to Diego Brandão. And he lost his last fight to Ricardo Lamas, but in between he'd won 7 fights in a row. He will make the same amount of money right now, according to that tiering, as Hatsuhiyoki.
Yeah.
Though I think Hatsuhiyoki might be a poor example because I don't think the Japanese guys go for sponsors very much, do they?
Well, they usually just have like one big sponsor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll have like that one thing, but they don't NASCAR it like, you know, like American fighters and Brazilian fighters do.
Like
yeah,
Aljamain,
you know,
Sterling was saying, yeah.
Yeah, so I do think that that's like, I guess at the end of the day, what I ask you to is, and Jordan chime in here, what does the UFC want? Why is the UFC doing this? If they claim that they're, let's assume that they're telling the truth, which I don't believe they are, but let's assume they're telling the truth, for the majority minus operating costs of money that they get from Reebok is going back to the fighters, then what is it they think they're accomplishing?
Okay, I'll break it down here. You remember them, them old sitcoms where they had that dorky little guy with the pretty girl who was his really good friend, and so he would hatch a scheme with her, and they'd get together, and maybe they were boyfriend and girlfriend, maybe they weren't, I don't know. So the girl that he really liked found him more attractive and wanted to go to the dance with him. I think that's all that Dirty Dana money, you know what I mean? I think they're just getting in bed with big names, you know, Reebok, and they're streamlining everything to sell it. I think they're just dating pretty girls.
That's why I said Jordan chime in here, because that's where I wanted you to go with it. Like, you had an interesting theory. I hadn't thought of it until you said it earlier to me offline, but
you know,
you think they're streamlining to sell the company.
It's Screech hanging out with Lark Voorhees so he can get Jesse to like him and go to the dance with him. That's all it is. They're trying to line up big names and pretty faces to sell it, I think. Just my opinion.
To make the company look more attractive to investors and buyers, I guess I would say.
Well, yeah, that's why I don't think they're too worried about particulars right now. You know, if they were in a long term and this 2500 came out, they'd have some explaining to do, but I think they're just, when investors look at it, investors aren't going to give a shit what the fighters are making. They're not invested in it. They're buying it for a business. So what the investor sees, or whoever's buying it sees, is Reebok. Oh shit, we're locked into Reebok for the next 6 years. That sounds appealing. I mean, outside of MMA fans, most people probably don't give a shit what fighters make. They just want to watch the fights. Which is kind of fucked up, but that's the way it is. So, I think they're just getting in bed with big names. They're streamlining everything, trying to compare. They're going out of their way in interviews to compare themselves to the big leagues. oh, the NFL, even read that article on old Fertitta, Furtado, whatever the hell his name is, Lorenzo, he said, whoa, we went out and bought a guy or hired a guy who used to run NFL equipment management. You know, all you got to do is say, hey, we hired someone who can do the job. I think they're just trying to build themselves up, compare themselves to established stuff, get in bed with big names, and they're going to sell it.
That totally reminds me of that one scene from Wayne's World. You remember that scene from Wayne's World?
Which one?
Be more specific.
it's in the middle of the movie where they see that Wayne's basement's been recreated on a studio, and Wayne and Garth go off on this tangent, and they're talking about like they go through all of the product sponsors that they've got, like Pizza Hut,
oh, like
and
Doritos and Pepsi, yeah. And yeah,
just,
I do remember
a whole
that.
Lot of name dropping.
Well, that's what it is. When a little company gets ready to sell to a big company, yeah, I mean they cut out all the bullshit. It's I think that's what they're doing. They're trying to establish something because I mean, if you're an investor and you go into the UFC, one of the concerns is fighter pay. Well, how do they get paid? Because nobody really understands it too much. There's so much dirty Dana money floating around in backstage bonuses and checks and all that stuff. So, I mean, to get a cut and dry, this is how much they make minimum. That they have that done. That to me, that would put investors' mind at ease. I don't know anything. I
agree with you. I was at a company that got bought out one time, and the company that bought where I was working paid 8 times the value. Okay, so let's say that like where I was working was worth $100 million. They paid $800 million. And, you know, I was talking to one of the executives that signed off on the sale, and I was like, man, you know, I was like, they say they're not going to change anything, but, like, they're going to wait 8 years to make a profit off their investment. And he was like, absolutely not. He was like, we sold them, because he was one of the people making a lot of money off of it. He's like, I didn't sell them what the company was worth. I sold them the company's potential for increased value. He's like, they're going to come in here, and they're going to slash and burn, and they're going to lean everything out. And that's what a company wants. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if a company were to pay the UFC $2 billion, they're not going to wait X number of years after X number of events to recoup that. You know, things are only going to get more streamlined and cheaper, and you know what I mean? Like, it's happened with, you know, a lot of organizations that have been bought out by bigger companies. And, you know, what you kind of got to earlier made me, you know, had me thinking about you're comparing themselves to the NFL and shit, and how we were talking earlier about pay. You know, you want to compare yourself to the NFL and say, well, the NFL doesn't have sponsors. Individual players in the NFL don't have sponsors on their jersey, I think is what Dana White said. But those guys are making a $400,000 a year league minimum. You know what I mean? And you're not paying your fighters that. But it goes into what you were saying. They're just trying to streamline everything, line up with Bud Light and Reebok, you know, and Monster, and make themselves look like the next X Games or something like that and sell themselves off. I mean, because I know that – I don't think it's any secret. It's easily looked up online that the Fertittas have leveraged losses in their casinos with the value of the UFC. So who knows? Maybe they're getting overextended. Maybe you're right, Jordan. Maybe they're getting overextended at Station Casinos in Las Vegas, and, you know, they need some quick cash in the UFC. So they're doing what's best for them and not what's best for the fighters.
No doubt in my mind. I went full
Alex Jones right there, by the way. I went full conspiracy theory. Jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams. all that shit. I just went there. You know what? You guys were there, though. For the guys at home, you know, we talk. The three of us talk all day, every day. Okay? And when... You know, there was that issue with Rampage and the injunctions and, you know, is he going to fight? Is he not going to fight? Is he going to fight the most boring fight ever, pretty much? Is he going to gas out? Which happened. You know, the talk was, you know, that, like, the Fertittas pulled a jersey favor and, you know, got a mobbed-up judge or something to give them that favorable, you know, little judgment to let Rampage fight in the next couple of days. So, I mean... I don't know. I don't think there are conspiracy theories are too far off. Matt just humors Jordan and I because he's Canadian. They don't have conspiracies up there. So
It's a sand
plant. You know what, though? That's an interesting side topic. Matt, what is your – what in Canada, what is your Kennedy assassination? What's your big conspiracy theory plot?
What's your Area 51? What's your inside job? Yeah,
what's all that? What is that in Canada? What is that?
I don't think – you know what? I think I have to Google biggest conspiracies in Canada because I can't think of anything at all. Biggest conspiracies in Canadian history. Approximately zero results on Google.
Okay, well, there was the retired defense minister of Canada admitting that aliens were
UFOs.
Real and they walk among us.
Yes, I do remember that. I remember that because I thought that was a pretty fucking big deal because, like, Matt, like, I know I make fun of you and Canada quite a bit. Everybody at home, I'm sorry, I do make fun of Canada quite a bit to Matt, and he just takes it. But I actually really, really respect the Canadian military and their government and their, you know, and like when that dude said the aliens are real, I was like, that's legit, that's it, that's all I need to know, fucking aliens. Fucking the Canadian guy says it, you know, I'm like, it's fucking real.
I've
like,
been saying
if the guy
it
from
years.
Luxembourg said that, if the guy from Luxembourg said that, I wouldn't believe him, you know. But, you know, or like Argentina or some shit. If Canada says it, okay, there are hats. And I kind of believe my hat when it talks to me. Okay, a little bit.
there's one conspiracy, but I don't know. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to offend anybody or rile anybody up. Because I don't know anything about
what?
It, so I'm not going to.
God damn it, Jordan. Is it really bad? Can you really not say it?
No, it's not bad. I just don't know anything about it.
But if it could offend people, it would be bad.
It's not. I don't know if it's bad. We Facebook, so I'll just type it in right now.
Type it in, and then we'll decide if it... That's Jordan typing.
How do you spell memorial? There we go. There we go. I don't know anything about it. I don't want to, like, you know.
Well, I don't know anything about that either. Matt, does that make any sense to you, what we're looking
no.
at right here?
I'm sure I've so read then, something about it before, but
what's the conspiracy,
no.
Jordan? Go ahead.
The Ottawa War Memorial shooting. A little before 10 a.m., October 22nd, a man armed with a shotgun fired a Canadian soldier named...
Oh, I remember that, yeah. Yeah.
I
remember
that.
Yeah.
And the conspiracy was that Canada raised its terror level earlier that morning. The Prime Minister Stephen Harper was railing against rifles. They're saying it was staged so they could have more gun control. Here's the review. I don't know, RIDEAU, Radio, Center,
mm-hmm.
Mole, and multiple shooters. The 4chan users allege police were already on the scene before the shooting, and something about a badge. I don't know.
Interesting.
All right, that's a pretty decent conspiracy, Matt. You guys can be proud, okay, of that. You know, that you guys have a, I mean... That's pretty neat. Here's my problem with all conspiracies. Is everybody... So, like, think about every conspiracy you've ever heard of. Every conspiracy you've ever heard of, no matter how big or small. Because even the small ones are big, right? In the resources they would take. Do you believe it is possible for the at least 100 people involved in even the smallest conspiracy to all keep their mouths shut? Absolutely not.
Yes.
That's why I don't believe in most conspiracies.
Yes.
I don't, because there's always somebody that's going to do fucking something stupid. Because if that were true, if the majority of conspiracy theories could be true, right, and all those people could keep their mouths shut, we would have never made inroads into taking down, like, the mafia in New York. Because, like, they had, like, a much better reason to keep their mouths shut because they were going to get killed. You know what I mean? So, like, there's no way that most conspiracies could be true because that many people just couldn't keep their mouths shut.
Well, that's the thing, though. Okay, I'm going to go off.
That's what we're here for.
you don't think the government helps people stay quiet? And by helps, I mean shoot them in the face.
I agree with that in a certain extent, that could happen from time to time. But I think on smaller things that we would never even know there was a conspiracy theory about. Like, a conspiracy theory big enough for me to have heard or known about, like, okay, 9/11 inside job, all right? There's a lot of people that would have had to have been so involved in that. We're talking hundreds of people that would have had to have been involved and set that up, and not a one of them, like, came forward or said something stupid to their barber, you know, when they got drunk at the bar on Saturday night or something. Come on. I can't keep half our fight cards quiet.
thank you for that. What organization do all those people belong to? Where do they work?
America.
In the government. Yeah.
Keeping the guy making 25 grand a year is like the, you know what I mean? Like, you're talking like, you don't even have to keep the government quiet. You have to keep like the 25 grand a year rookie highway patrolman that responded to some bullshit in New York. You know what I mean? You have to keep him quiet too. You know what I mean? The guy that's in his first year and he's in his major, like, I believe in law and order and, you know, I watched Judge Dredd too many times or whatever, you know, that bullshit, like, thinks he's like fucking RoboCop. You know what I mean? You got to keep those people quiet too. There's all the, like, it's a spider web. So only the real conspiracies, the real crazy shit that happens in the government is the shit we never hear about. And that goes for Canada too, Matt. Don't think your government's exempt for that shit. Okay.
No, definitely not.
All governments are doing shady shit, but chances are if you've heard of it, it's really just a conspiracy theory because the real super shady shit will never get out to us because those people, like Jordan said, are dead. But here we are, an MMA podcast. We're talking about conspiracy theories and black ops. I don't know how we got here, but I feel like we should redirect back to maybe UFC Fight Night this weekend in Adelaide.
Why don't we take
off.
We'll take a quick 1 minute break here, and we'll bring you the American Rosso song I was talking about.
Here we go.
Comedy.
Killing people.
LA.
A great place to be eaten by sharks.
LA.
Nothing Bogan compared to Kalgoorlie. Beautiful people, this city's got it all. A great sense of pride that comes with massive balls. Unfairly deceived by all the other states. But take a look and see what's fucking great.
You can marry your dad, you can join the Taliban, you can name your daughter Daryl or wind up in a barrel.
LA.
13% of Australia's payphones are located in Adelaide. More people go missing in Adelaide than in any other city. Take that, Queensland. Adelaide has been ranked by the UN as the world's raddest city. So if you're planning a cheap holiday that's a bit crap, why not choose Adelaide, the fashion capital of Australia, home of world-class entertainment. Look, there's the mayor.
There's some good visuals that went with the video too that you unfortunately missed, but I think the mayor was.
Were they really named the most raddest city? Were they really named the most raddest city?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it would ever. I don't think that would ever fly. In
I would
Australia.
Go there. I would go if it was the most raddest city. I would scoop up Jordan, and I would go there.
Well, maybe
because
it has
we're
been
the only
most...
two that still use the word rat. So
yeah,
done.
So
maybe
is it, really...
it has been. I was just going to say maybe it has been voted the most raddest city in Australia because the UFC is going there this Saturday.
I love this segue. That was some producer shit.
That was some producer shit.
That was slicker than Hooker's puss on payday, I'll give you that.
Oh!
And speaking of Hooker, he's fighting on this card too.
Boom. Segwayed
that
again.
Was some double producer right. shit right there. Holy shit. And now you know who keeps us in line.
That's right.
Producer
now
Matt.
You know why they pay me the minimum bucks to produce the show.
The minimum, the zero. We actually pay to do this show.
Yeah, I'm on the 1-5 fight tier special contract right now. I've been there since show one.
I was going to say earlier, we're not looking for sponsors. We're just looking for friends with benefits.
Oh. Listen, there's only one important fight on this entire card.
And that's, what are you saying? That's just the first one? The first one on the prelim
card? That's right, the first one. He doesn't call, he doesn't write. He abandoned St. Louis for a sweet home in New York. I can't blame him, but I hold it against him. Mal Pekanoskowicz, a friend of the show, fighting Ben Wynn. Which makes me laugh because I love that cartoon Ben 10 and it rhymes. But
well, you know his nickname is Ben 10, right?
Is it really? No, I didn't know that.
Dude's nickname is straight up Ben 10 Win. Yeah.
I loved that cartoon when it came out. I fucking loved that cartoon. But he is fighting my dude. And I don't know, Alp has those weird Turkish sensibilities. Where he's like weirdly formal all the damn time, but you know, still love the guy, still hope he wins.
And for those of you guys listening out there, Alp is actually one of the few guys, the few UFC fighters out there, that still pretty well responds to every single tweet he receives. So if that's not a reason, the guy, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the guy he's fighting is coming off like a pretty good win streak, seven win streak or something like that.
Well, he's also a bit of a celebrity in Australia too.
I didn't know that, really.
Yeah, he was.
Wait, Ben Wynn?
He was fighting a guy.
He trains in the U.S., doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he's American, but he moved to Australia to chase after a girl. And so he started fighting MMA, started fighting MMA in Australia and, ended up against this one guy. I can't remember his name. His real name is Julian something or other, but they call him Jules the Jackal. Very much into his tattoos, Jordan.
Julian.
Yeah.
He'll always be sexy to me.
And, apparently Jules was a bit of a dink to him at the weigh-ins and pushed him around and put his fist up in his face and Ben knocked him out in 20 seconds. And, it became this huge thing in Australia because it then turned into the whole, it became like a big, Ben apparently became the face of anti-bullying or something like that. And Jules was the face of bullying and Jules disappeared for a while because I guess he was embarrassed and he came back and said, look, this isn't me. I just got caught up in the moment and so on. But that's how Ben kind of got his name. So when Ben signed to fight Alp, it was actually a pretty big deal.
When you you tattoo your face like that, you look like a dick. Trust me, I know.
That's what made me laugh. I'm not trying to talk to you, Jordan, but like I wasn't expecting that to be what you said, so like it really caught me by surprise.
But that being said, Alp's a huge favorite to win this fight, and I don't blame anybody.
What's the odds? You're so much better. Sometimes people will be like, hey, who do you got? And I'm like, let me text Matt because like he'll know the odds better than me. And,
you know,
I need to know.
I haven't actually put a buck down on a fight in months now, but I still follow the odds here and there. Alp was a -190 the last I looked.
Okay.
So almost a 2-1
favorite, but really, really strong.
Well, he's one of the bigger favorites on this card.
You know, Alp is obviously an amazing wrestler, and he has a good chin, and he's got good stand-up, but his jiu-jitsu is shit. You know, I've told Alp that. Alp knows, if he's not listening. But if he were to go back and listen to this later, Alp's jiu-jitsu is not where it needs to be. It never has been, and... You know, and it's simple. Alp loves to wrestle, and he likes to do stand-up. He hates fucking jiu-jitsu for whatever reason, probably because he's uncomfortable off his back from being a wrestler. Alp fucking hates jiu-jitsu. And so, you know, you're not going to see a lot of wins by sub from Alp. What's interesting to me is that Ben has, you know, a really even record to me. You know, he's got a lot of... you know, KO, TKOs, but he's got a fair number of submissions too. And I don't know, I think it'll actually be an interesting fight. Of course I'm favoring Alp. I know he's training hard. I know where he's training in New York and, you know, the camps he's going through. And
and you know, it's whatever. I'm not trying to sound, you know, nationalistic or whatever, but I feel like MMA training is more well-rounded in the U.S. versus anywhere else in the world. I think that we have the most well-rounded MMA training here, and I don't think that Ben's probably technically is good, but I do worry that with this fight that Alp maybe gets into a ground situation where maybe Ben's jiu-jitsu is just a little bit better. So I think that my prediction is Alp wins, but if he loses by sub, probably in like the second round.
Yeah. Now Alp has, and maybe you guys know this a little better. Maybe you know this a little better, Matt. Has Alp not been training with Renzo Gracie out that way? Or has he?
He has been. I mean, it's not his regular, you know, that's not his regular spot, but he does pop in there fairly often. They're in close, they're in close proximity. So
yeah.
Alp is training with that gym as well. You know, that's not his main gym, but he's out there probably at least once a week, I'd say. So, you know, Renzo's school, though, if you've ever been there, it's, of course, it's a Gracie school. It's a Renzo Gracie school. Jiu-jitsu is the key. But, you know, MMA programs, you know, even at my gym that I trained at and, you know, I came up in, you know, started off, the owner used to say it all the time, you know, all I wanted to make was a jiu-jitsu school. It's all you assholes that wanted to fight, you know. So I feel like that's Renzo's school. But the MMA program was still very separate. You know, we had a rule in our school that you couldn't go pro as an MMA fighter until you had your blue belt in jiu-jitsu. But I think that was rare to us. I don't think most schools have that. I don't know if Renzo's school does or not. I could find out, I guess. But, you know, that's not a normal thing, you know, for schools to get. Because who was it, John Jones or who was it recently? They were like, yeah, he may be the champ, but he's still a white belt because he won't come in and train the gi. There was somebody's coach that said that, you know, and it was one of the UFC champs. And I want to say John
Jones.
Yeah,
I can't remember who it was.
Sure.
Might have been John Jones, yeah.
Yeah, but they're like, you know, yeah, but, you know, I'm not going to promote him because he's not, he hasn't been training jiu-jitsu.
Right.
So, you know, I maybe see him go to school a little bit, you know.
Was it,
what was that, Jordan?
Reed, I'm not going to go into it now, but there's a really interesting story about how Josh Barnett got his black belt. He didn't get the traditional way. It's worth looking up. I can't remember details, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So are there any other fights you guys are looking forward to on this card? Because I got 1, 2, 3, 4 fights that I'm looking forward to on this card outside of Alps.
Alps, obviously, for me. I'm looking forward to Sam Alvey and Kelly, Daniel Kelly. Lisa Ellis and Beck Rawlings could be interesting. And then, of course, you know, Hunt and Miocic. I think that'll be a good fight.
So, I mean, you guys know I'm a big Lisa Ellis fan just because she's kind of local around here. She's from Washington State. You know, I've been followed her for a little while. She's got some really, really interesting
wins. Olympia, right?
Olympia,
yeah.
And
isn't that
I'm
more
just,
local to me than you?
That's more local to you, yeah. But I consider the, you know, the whole Washington State, Oregon guys. You guys are my boys. So, I got really turned off Beck Rawlings during The Ultimate Fighter, and I'm still not a big fan of hers. So, kind of hoping Lisa can get some redemption. She's pretty much hit the rough patch in her career, but she's still got some crazy wins. She's very good on the ground. She's one of the few people I know that have beaten somebody by scarf hold choke, and she beat Miku in her prime. So, you know, hopefully she still got it. I'm just
beat somebody by scarf hold choke. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
What I need to see that, because a scarf hold choke literally relies on the gi. That's like what it's called, a scarf. It's wrapping a scarf around a throat. The judo submission. It's like the first judo submission you learn. Who did she beat by scarf hold choke?
I think it was Miku Matsumoto. I've never actually seen a video of the fight, but people keep talking about
it. I'm
gonna
have to see a scarf hold arm lock. You know what I think that is? I mean, what I think that they're calling that, but what it really is an arm triangle.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the promotion Smack Girl, which is what?
Yeah.
But
it's exactly
I bet
what
you
was.
That I think that it was an arm triangle, yeah. Because a scarf hold means I'm using my sleeve to choke you out, mm-hmm. essentially, you know. So kind of hard in MMA to use your sleeve.
I am kind of looking forward to the Alex Chambers-Kaylin Kern fight just because I like Alex Chambers, but she's a really small, really, really small strawweight. She came up from 105 to fight in the UFC, so... I don't know. She's very, very undersized. So yeah, her win in Invicta was at atom weight. So they brought her up to
the
ultimate fighter.
She's older too, isn't she? She's like in her mid to late
37 or something like that. I think she was the oldest cast member on the Ultimate Fighter, and she just made it. Like she just snuck in when the announcement was there. I think she was actually 36 at the time of filming. And then obviously I look forward to any Hatsu Hioki fight just because I like his entrance music. That's it. I'm just putting it out there. Any guy that swags and walks out to music that was made famous in Dance Dance Revolution, you got my vote any day of the week.
I you know what, and I hate him for that same reason, because I'm so completely inept at Dance Dance Revolution. So he reminds me of my inadequacy, so I don't respect him. You know?
You know what? We did not get drunk enough to wander over to Circus because there would probably have been some Dance Dance Revolution games on that Vegas trip, had there been.
You play DDR. You dance it out.
A long time ago, I used to play a lot of DDR. It actually helped me lose like 30 pounds, because you know me, right? I'm just big into video games in general. So here was this video game. I was like, all right, DDR is just a video game. And I just kept playing it. I admit I got pretty good at it for 2003 standards. So,
see, I've tried it a few times. Obviously, never practiced, but I always hit the crossbar areas of the pedal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm not accurate with my footsteps, I guess I would say. So fuck that game. Let's go play Top Gun.
And then of course we got Mark Hunt and Stipe, of course.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Stipe's the favorite, right? He better be.
Stipe is a minus 240 right now.
Yeah, minus 240. Okay. I see this going to a boring decision, because Stipe is going to come out and he's really going to try and finish Hunt. I think we all know that. Stipe finishes people like crazy. And I don't think he can put Hunt down, though. I don't think he's that strong. So I think he wins. But I think he wins off of like a 30-27 decision. I think Hunt goes out on the shield for sure. But I don't think that he can – I don't think he can bring it against Stipe. And I think Stipe can't finish Hunt. So we end up with a 30-27 decision where they both gas out about 1 minute into the second round. And we're left with a shitty second half and a horrible third round.
I think I think people are remembering the Stipe and Roy Nelson fight from UFC 161, and they're kind of looking at that and going, okay, well, if that's what Stipe did to Roy Nelson, who's a, you know, fat dude, heavy power puncher, maybe that's what he's going to do to Mark Hunt as well. I don't know. I mean, Mark Hunt, I think, is probably one of those guys that goes for the kill the most, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
So
puncher's
I think
chance for Hunt,
it,
for
it
sure.
It definitely
puncher's
is. I think compared to Roy Nelson, even, he goes for the kill, like, on his feet more. So I'm very interested in seeing how Stipe is going to defend basically Mark throwing the kitchen sink and Nissan Sentras and stuff at him, you know, for 15 minutes. I don't.
Where the fuck did Nissan Sentra come in?
I don't know.
Like, of all things. Like, what?
I don't know where. I don't really think the odds are very fair for Mark Hunt here. I do think Stipe is the favorite, but I think he's, Mark Hunt's a little bit underappreciated here, but I certainly think that if JDS couldn't go to the lengths of knocking out Stipe, I don't know that Mark Hunt's going to be able to at this point, because just the wear down on JDS, I think, is just it's more than what Mark Hunt can do with his one punch knockout stuff.
As long as Stipe has been, you know, and I mean, dude's an OG, 14 fights in, whatever. You know, he has a sizable reach advantage over Mark Hunt. As long as he utilizes that, you know, he can go for the kill a few times. As long as he utilizes his reach, You know, he's got like a 5-inch reach advantage or something crazy like that. Then, I mean, Hunt's going to go for the kill, but all he's going to get is counterpunched every time he comes in. That's what I'm saying. I think that the first round is going to be exciting because you're going to have Hunt like a little Wolverine, okay, and Stipe just like jabbing him out. And then I think that the first bit of the second round, you're going to have Stipe going for the kill because Hunt. And then I think after that, they're both gassed out, and we end up with, you know, Maypac. So.
And that was our discussion of Mayweather-Pacquiao for the night.
There it is. Third round of Miocic and Hunt will be Maypac.
You waited an hour and 10 minutes, and that's all we're going to give you about Maypac.
Done.
That's all it deserves.
All right, well, guys, it was a lot of fun doing this. And just to sum it up, we all think Stipe takes the main event, right?
Yeah, I do.
I have to go on record and say this may literally be the first time in my entire life that I've actually gone against Mark Hunt. I feel kind
well,
of guilty for doing
you were
it
wrong
I'm one
nine
of the most,
other times then.
I'm one of the most loyal Mark Hunt fans I know. I just, you know, Stipe showed up on our show. He listened to 45 minutes of possibly the most time-wasting bullshit that he's ever been through in an MMA interview. He listened to 60 different variations of nicknames he could have had, and he still stuck around with us. He didn't hang up. He laughed. He appreciated it. So, you know, I'm Stipe, I'm with you for life, man.
Team Stipe.
All right, that's Beards on MMA for this week. We are hopefully back next week.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We do what we want. Yeah, exactly.
Real quick.
So, yes.
We got to get Lehi Dominguez on here. He's a good guy. Hi, buddy.
All right.
So, buddy, we hope you're listening now that we've given you the shout-out. And if you're not, then you can't come on our show.
That's the rule. Them's the rule.
All right. So, because we do whatever we want, for you guys, I'm going to close out with what could have been an opening song, but is actually our closing song instead. And I'll take one for Canada
come
here
at me,
because
bro.
Alana Miles is a Canadian. Yeah.
Ah.
catch you guys next week.